Welcome to a special supplemental edition of the OpenPaddock.net podcast. Earlier this week, our iSide IndyCar Series reporter Kevin Neely and our photographer Brian McKay were at the Barber Motorsports Park to cover the preseason open test for the iSide IndyCar. You heard their report from Monday's Media Day on episode 179, and tonight Kevin Neely is back with us to talk about what happened on Tuesday and Wednesday. Kevin, good evening.
What up, homie?
So we heard all about the very soggy, wet, nasty, cold and icky Media Day that pretty much put a complete stop on any IndyCar or Indy Lights testing. But, of course, we recorded the show that night on Monday night, but there are still all kinds of stuff happening on Tuesday and Wednesday. Tell us a little bit about what happened there at the Open Test.
Well, let's see. I guess we can start on Tuesday. It was really cold Tuesday morning, by the way. And there was still some moisture left on the track. So we had a bit of a hold on Monday morning. The test was supposed to start at 9, got pushed back to 9:30, but, you know, it was kind of cool because everybody was just so relaxed and so laid back, and pushing the start time back a little bit like that helped everybody kind of mellow out even a little bit more. And it was a really just good environment to be around. You know, everybody's real positive, everybody's just kind of chilling, literally, because it's cold.
So what were the track temperatures like?
Well, the track temps, okay, first of all, to understand, Firestone does not allow cars on track until the air temperature, also known as ambient temperature, and the track temperatures are both 50 degrees. That's the requirement, and they
okay,
are very...
Okay, so the ambient temperature has to be 50 as well.
Ambient and track temperatures
okay.
have to be
so
50.
I knew that track temperature had to be at least 50, but I wasn't aware that the ambient had to be that high as well.
Yeah, so me and a bunch of other guys were kind of huddled around the Firestone cart that's on a pit road, just staring at this monitor on the back of the cart with the temperatures on it, and we're like watching it inch up, and the guys from Firestone are like moving their sensors around trying to kind of get into the best possible position for temperatures to go up.
Kind of fudging the data a little bit.
Yeah, so it's like,
as a scientist, I really shouldn't laugh at that.
It's funny because they're like walking around the track with pit gun temperature guns. You know, I said one of them would say like, "I've got 48 right here," and they're like, "Oh yeah, well I got 49 over here."
Nice.
So it finally hit 50 degrees around 9:30. Tristan Vautier was first on track.
Man, it's so good to see him in an IndyCar ride.
He is such a good kid, too. I mean, he is such a good kid. Very personable, very approachable. Speaks amazing English, by the way. Better than most people that are native English speakers that I know. But yeah, he got out there, and he was actually on top of the speed chart for a pretty good bit of the morning until... Oh, sorry, girl. I just punched my cat in the face. until the big guys started coming out as the temperatures went up. But Vautier would, and that is actually the proper pronunciation. It's not Vautier, it's Vautier. I learned that. Even though he humored me once when I said Tristan Vautier. I asked him if that was correct, and he said, "Yeah, that's fine." No, it's not Tristan, it's Vautier.
That's what they, when they go, "Yeah, that's fine," that means, no, it's not right.
Yeah.
For years of it as a teacher, I can tell you that. When you get someone's name wrong and they go, "Yeah, that's fine," it isn't fine.
But Vautier would end up 18th in the morning session that day with a fast lap at 109.8132. Now, we knew it was going to be a fast day when, with about an hour left in the morning session, the track record was already gone.
So
not officially, but the everybody was under Will Power's track record.
So what had happened? What happened over the off season that they found so much speed with this car?
Well, there were several things that happened. Number one, and Dario Franchitti actually explained this best to me. He said that first of all, Firestone went back and reanalyzed their tire compounds and redeveloped the structure of their tires. And they just simply made a better tire for Barber. Second of all, Barber during the off season went through a diamond grinding process. that nobody had really talked about, and that made the tracks way grippier. Simona told me that typically when you would pull out of the pits at Barber on cold tires, it was incredibly slick, and so they would have to watch out and keep from goosing it and hitting the gas a little too hard and the back end coming around and everything. She said that just simply did not exist anymore.
Okay.
So
what had happened is we got two things. We got before we had older asphalt that had been polished a bit, and you know, old asphalt gets that sheen. It's not as grippy. It's not as it just doesn't have the abrasiveness. But then also with the step up of the tires, we had better tires, we had a better surface, and just made for mad amounts of grip. It wasn't necessarily an engine increase or output increase or anything they found in the handling. It was all about the grip that the tires had on the road.
The changing of the tires, the diamond grinding. When you diamond grind a track like that, what you do is, honestly, you're kind of scuffing the surface a little bit. And when you scuff the surface a little bit, you remove that kind of sheen that you were talking about that's on the track, and the tires just naturally want to grip more. Now, sometimes you can go overboard with it like Indianapolis did, if you remember, to their cup race a few years ago, where you get so much adhesion that it just shreds the tires. Well,
okay. They ran the 500 just fine that year, if I remember. Right?
Right, on Firestones.
I was going to say, it wasn't a track problem.
Okay, another interesting thing that was brought to my attention, let's see, I want to say it was it Justin Wilson? No, it wasn't Wilson. It may have been Sebastian Bourdais, was telling me that you could run 20 laps on the track with your blacks on and not even lose a second off your lap times.
Wow.
Yeah, that was how good the tire is. And on the second day, I talked to Hinchcliffe early in the morning, and he said that I asked him about it, and he said that one of the things that they're all thinking about is, if we're this quick on blacks, just think about when we come back with the reds, because they don't get reds for testing.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think about this, you know, and of course, I initially think about it from a sports car perspective. Could they do a double stint on tires? But, you know, what? As soon as I say that, I think about it again, and of course, it takes a lot longer to fuel an Indy car than it does to put tires on an Indy car. And so I guess double stinting really wouldn't be advantageous, would it?
No, it really wouldn't.
I mean, even though you could, you're not going to save any time.
You could, and you could, but you know, double stinting tires in Indy cars really just doesn't do a whole lot of good.
Yeah.
Because once those when an Indy car tire, there is a huge drop off on performance when it actually does start dropping off. I've had drivers tell me in the past that like when you're qualifying with reds, typically you get one good lap out of them.
Right, and then they're done.
Yeah, and then they're toast.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see when they come back how durable the reds are.
Yeah.
Because if you can run 20 laps on blacks and not even lose a second off your lap time, then I'm thinking you could probably get a good 5 or 6 out of a set of reds.
So did anyone talk about the lifetime of the blacks now versus their lifetime previously?
Not really. It was Bourdais that I really got into the discussion with about the tire compounds, because face it, we're both nerds like that. We like talking tire compounds.
Yeah, yeah.
but yeah, he was the one that told me that you could do 20 laps on the blacks and still hold it together.
Okay.
So I can talk to some people though and get some more information about that. So
you know, not everyone is of course Mr. Peachin, as he said once, he just hears the Charlie Brown voices when Mr. Weitzel and I get geeking out on tech. But yeah, if you could track some of that information down, I know I'd be interested. Mr. Weitzel would be interested. I know a couple of our fans would be as well.
Maybe Mr. Sendrick can pass that information along.
There
Tim,
we go.
That'd Tim, if you're listening, give me a call. You have my card. But yeah, the morning session was kind of a get to know everybody kind of thing. Will Power came out on top in the morning session with a 108.4984. That equates to 120.879 miles per hour, by the way. Turned 18 laps. Hinch was second with a 108.5729, and he turned 18 laps. Ryan Hunter-Reay was third with a 108.7023 after 10 laps. And Castro Neves was fourth with a 108.7702 on 16 laps. And Dixon rounded out the top five at a 108.9443 with 18 laps. Now, one interesting thing looking at the results from test session one here is the fact that both Power and Hunter-Reay turned their fastest lap on their last lap.
Well, you know, the thing is, and I don't know how much you can really show out of testing. I've always viewed testing like standardized exams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can tell who's lightning fast and who is dog slow. But then everything in the middle is kind of up in the air. It's like a standardized test. You can tell who's really, really, you know, on top of things and who's way, way behind. And then you have this vast sea of middle where it's all up in the air. And so with these testing times, especially thinking, well, their fast lap was at the last. Well, maybe during those early laps, they were testing different sections. They were trying to get data specifically on how our car forms in this particular type of element. And so they weren't putting together, you know, a whole fast lap, but were concentrating on certain elements, certain speed elements and loading.
One thing that a lot of guys told me was that on Tuesday, one thing that they were doing was focusing on getting a good base setup for racing,
mm-hmm.
and using that day to kind of develop a general setup. And then Wednesday was more for the teams, was more about barber testing.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Now, you had a few people that told me, it's like, you know, there's really not a lot you can take away from this track and apply it to other tracks, but it's important to test well here because we race here, unlike last year when we had our preseason test at Sebring and blah, blah, blah. And then there was a lot of guys that were like, yeah, we're just looking for a good base to other places, and we're looking to get a feel of the balance of the car and the new tire compound and mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada.
You know, so, you could say that it's not applicable to other places, but if it wasn't, then why are you there, right?
Exactly. I think that's a lot of people just trying to hide their cards, so to speak.
Well, and trying to maybe downplay the hype that everyone always seems to place on testing and testing times.
Right.
And who ranks above who. I mean, because let's be honest, there's no trophy for practice, right?
No.
But, you know, even though, yes, nothing else is exactly like Barber, you still have a lot of the same elements that you see at Barber at some of the other natural terrain road courses that they go to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I don't know. There's data that will transfer.
So then we had the lunch break. I would like to thank the people at Team Penske for the lovely lunch on Tuesday. They had a press conference on the second floor of the control tower at Barber to announce Quicken Loans had come on board as a sponsor of Team Penske, and they provided all the press with a nice lunch. So,
nice.
Thank you, Brent. That was pretty awesome of you guys.
See, that's the thing that that you rider types get to indulge in and enjoy more than us Botog types. Because usually, when all that stuff's going on, you're getting the free food and stuff. We're out in 100 degree heat in the full sun, just sweating our off.
Hey, I will have you know that I sent Brian a text and said, awesome lunch on second floor by Penske, come get some.
You're a good man. You're a good man.
And by God, he did. I'm looking out for my photogs, okay?
Nice.
I'm looking out for my photogs. So, session two. We come back out and lap times get even lower. In fact, we finish up session two with Willpower turning a 107.8625. Now, I remind you that his fast time on session one was a 108.49. That's a half-second drop, essentially, from morning session to evening session, and that's pretty good. Elio Castro Neves was second in practice two with a 107.9388. Hinch was third with a 107.9869. Mike Conway was fourth with a 108.1584, and EJ Viso rounded out the top five at 108.2190. Now, there were several interesting things about session two on the practice that everybody was talking about. First of all, everybody's jaw was pretty much dropped from the lower during track times, because I mean it was dropping significantly quickly. The second thing everybody was dealing with that was kind of taking everybody's surprise was that in the top 10 in the session, you had Mike Conway, EJ Viso, Simona De Silvestro, Joseph Newgarden, and Simon Pagenaud.
Nice.
Yeah. And then names like Graham Rahal and Dario Franchitti and stuff like that, they were way down near the bottom. But I suspect that more had to do with them working on setups as opposed to trying to turn hot laps.
You know, that's it exactly. You know, as I was mentioning before, it's working on setup, you know, focusing on, you know, one element at a time, trying to get everything dialed in just right. Now, I will say, though, that you know, you don't end up P5 or, you know, up there in the top five or you know, near the pointy end of the time charts without having genuine speed,
right?
Even in testing, so it's good to see people like Viso and DeSilvestro up there.
Now, the last thing about Session 2, the story was AJ Allmendinger, and it wasn't for the reasons that he would really want to be the story.
Well, you know, when I heard about his testing with Penske this you know, earlier in the week, you know, I guess I wasn't expecting a whole lot from him in terms of pace. I mean, how long's it been since he's been in an open-wheel car?
It's been 7 years.
And these things, they don't handle like a 5,000-ton beast of a NASCAR.
You know? Not even.
And so I honestly didn't expect a whole lot of speed out of him. And not because he isn't a good driver, that's not what I'm saying. It's just it's been so long that I figured it would take him a little bit to come back to grips with an open-wheel car.
He was being really hard on himself, though, and one of the reasons that he was being so hard on himself was he had 3 or 4 offs during session 2.
Well, that's not surprising, to be honest.
Well, here's the kicker, though. The one off that everybody has taken note of was going into turn 8, which is the museum turn at Barber. Okay, I'd like for everybody to keep in mind that at that part of the track, from the entrance of turn 7 to the exit of turn 8, it's one big complex. It's a right, a left, and then a hard right. Mm-hmm. And it's all going downhill. And it drops, you lose about 60 feet in that section. And it's a pretty short section of track. Okay, coming into 8, there was a report from a corner worker that Allmendinger got off track, launched himself about 10 feet into the air, came down, went into the gravel on the side of the museum turn, then managed to get the car rolling downhill, bump started it, and drove it back to the pits.
Wow. No, I was going to say, leading into there, I mean, it's an especially easy place to go off because you've been dealing with just mad amounts of grip, right?
Yeah.
As you're coming up, you know, past, what is it, turn 5, that's a big hairpin, right?
Yes.
And you come up over 6, and then it's the downhill towards 7 and 8. And so you're used to having enormous amounts of grip, and now all of a sudden the road's falling away from you.
Mm-hmm.
So your grip levels decrease, and it's a very technical section of the track as well. I mean, even if it were flat. And so, you know, well, we saw lots of offs there during the IndyCar race last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm not going to fault AJ for going off there, and mad props to getting the thing fired up and bringing it back to pits. That's awesome.
Now, I discussed it with Marshall Pruitt the next day. Kevin Lee said that he was standing at the top of turn 2 up on top of the hill mm-hmm. when this incident happened, and he said you could hear it.
Yeah, I remember him saying that on Trackside this week.
Marshall Pruitt and AJ had talked to each other about it, and AJ says there's no way he was 10 feet off the ground. And Marshall and I, and actually some of the people from Honda and Chevy and I, were discussing it in the media center yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he got 10 feet in the air, because if he did, when the car landed, it would have broke.
Well, you said he landed in the gravel.
Well, it came into the gravel. It didn't necessarily land in the gravel, but...
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, landing on gravel versus landing on you know, just the solid ground would make a big difference in the forces involved.
Right.
But if he landed on solid ground, yeah, drop from 10 feet.
Yeah.
I think you would feel that.
So AJ says that he may have gotten like maybe a foot or two or three in the air, but not any 10 feet. And if it's where the corner worker was standing that I can think of, which is at the bottom of the museum turn, and you're looking up into foot, then
and it's coming at you.
Yeah, it's coming at you. It might have looked like 10 feet.
But, at about 90 yards wide.
But I got to tell you, I caught AJ as he got out of the car on that session, and he was not a happy camper at all.
I expect not after, even you can say to yourself he has to spend 7 years, but you still want to perform, right?
Right. So end of practice two, when you look at the combined results for day one, everybody except for Dario had their fastest lap in session two. On Tuesday, there were a combined total of 1,146 laps turned. And your top 10 for the day were Will Power, Helio Castroneves, James Hinchcliffe, Mike Conway, EJ Viso, Simona De Silvestro, Oriol Servia, Scott Dixon, and Joseph Newgarden, and Simon Pagenaud rounded out the top 10. All right, now on to Wednesday. One thing that everybody told me on Tuesday morning, I talked to a lot of drivers on Tuesday morning, and the common thing was everybody's neck hurt, except for Simon Pagenaud, and then later I would find out that he was just telling me a story. Mr. Pagenaud, if you're listening to this, Sebastian Bourdais ratted you out. When I told him that everyone except for Pagenaud was complaining about their neck hurting, he said he told you a story because he told me last night his neck was killing him. So you've been ratted out, sir. Tuesday morning, the session didn't start until a little bit after 10 because we were waiting for track temps to come up again. And if you follow my Twitter, you saw my incessant pictures of the temperature gauge at the Firestone stand. So early on Wednesday morning, we had a lot of promos and commercials being shot for NBC. And so there were cars on track, but not the way you want them on track. But the good thing was, is I had spoken with Bo Barfield before I left the day before, and he said, we will have cars on track. And he said, and that will actually generate a little bit of temperature in the track. So it was kind of good to have them out there. Session three starts. A lot of teams are now working on their barber setups. And another thing a lot of teams are working on is the fact that this season you can choose your fuel load to start the race. So we had some red flags in session one. I'm sorry, session three. One of them came out for Ryan Hunter-Reay because he ran out of fuel. Then we had another red flag for Joseph Newgarden, who initially we thought had run out of fuel, but upon further inspection, he had an electrical issue and they had to take it back to the hauler to work on. Servia spun on the back stretch in the little chicane that goes up the hill. Mm-hmm. And then Tagliani also spun in that same area, backed it into the wall. No damage done, though. The Kardashians were intact. So the results from session three, you'll never guess who was on top of the speed chart.
Who's that?
Will Power.
Oh, well, yeah.
Will Power rounded out the top of session three.
You said that like I was actually going to be surprised. It's like, oh, well, no. Yeah.
Will turned a 107.49.81. Tony Kanaan was second with a 107.54.78. Hinchcliffe was third with a 107.62.47. Hunter-Reay was fourth with a 107.63.46. And Simona De Silvestro rounded out the top five with a 107.90.50. Then lunch break on Wednesday, we had a press conference with Graham Rahal and the Birmingham Zoo at his hauler.
The whole zoo?
Well, the representatives from the Birmingham Zoo who brought an African servial cat with them.
Oh, okay, hang on. Google to the rescue here. An African what?
Servial. S-E-R-V-A-L.
Okay, that's African serval. Ah, all right, so it looks kind of like an ocelot.
Yep.
And just as wonderfully charming and outgoing as an ocelot?
Oh, it was a little sweetheart. It was a big old kitty is what it was.
Oh, okay.
And also, this cat had been raised since it was 3 weeks old by its handlers. It was a runt that was abandoned by its mother.
Ah.
Well, the deal with that was is Graham Rahal and Honda and the Birmingham Zoo are doing a program where if you bring your ticket from the IndyCar race to the Birmingham Zoo through the month of April, you get free admission for two children with your ticket.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, that's the type of promotion that you love to see.
Yeah. Because come to find out, Graham Rahal's stepfather, his godfather is Jack Hanna.
Oh, okay, there you go. That completely explains it then, doesn't it?
And Graham said he had done a similar program with the Columbus Zoo, and since Honda has a big manufacturing presence in Alabama, and he likes coming to Birmingham, why not do something there too?
Yeah.
So they had a press conference about that, and you saw many drivers and crew members immediately rushing from their haulers with their camera phones to take pictures. I was standing next to Marshall Pruitt during this whole thing, and I asked him, I said, did you ever in your life think that you would be taking pictures of an African serval cat in the paddock of an IndyCar event? And he said, this is a new one on me. So we had fun, blah, blah, blah. A good time was had by all.
Yeah, I would like to see more local cross promotion like that. I know Bilardi Auto Racing with Wayne Boyd a couple years ago when USF 2000 was at the Milwaukee Mile did a little local cross promotion with the Milwaukee Indy Fest event that they had there, and I thought that was a neat idea then as well. It's good for the series. It's also good for the community in which the series races. It keeps people there. It, you know, maybe they decide to stay an extra day or two and spend a little bit more money in the community, attend some of the local events. So I love this type of program. Absolutely love it.
So then it's on to session four, the last session of the test. Kind of a boring session if you're just sitting around watching it. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of things going on. The speed plateau had pretty much leveled out. Everybody knew that we were going to be ending the day probably right at 107, which Willpower, once again, turns the fastest lap of the session at a 107.13.29. Now, I'd like to take a moment to remind everyone that Willpower also holds the official track record, which is a 109. Now, when we come back in a few weeks with the Reds, it's not entirely out of the realm to have a 106 flat or a 105.5.
Nice.
Yeah. James Hinchcliffe was second in the afternoon session with a 107.38.39. Justin Wilson was third with a 107.49.96. Scott Dixon was fourth with a 107.68.72. And Takuma Sato actually rounded out the top five at 107.75.34. The big off during session four was Ed Carpenter kind of smacked the wall pretty good and folded up one of his side pods. That was the big off. Also, Sebastian Saavedra had an off where coming out of the museum turn, number eight, he just goosed it a little too hard. The car spun, and the grass was actually still wet from the rain that we had because Alabama's clay dirt underneath the grass does not absorb water at all.
Yeah. No, it's same in Kansas.
So Saavedra spun off and just sheared the nose off of his car, but that was the only damage. Hunter Ray ran out of gas two more times testing fuel runs. But that was pretty much it. It was a fairly uneventful session altogether. Combined results for all four sessions, Willpower topped it. Hinch was second. Justin Wilson was third. Tony Kanaan fourth. Ryan Hunter Ray fifth. Dixon sixth. Takuma Sato seventh. Charlie Kimball eighth. Elio Castroneves ninth. And Simon Pagenaud rounded out the top ten. The only driver that did not break track record was Stefan Wilson. And that's honestly only because of the very limited time that he had in the car. Because when you consider the fact that he actually only got one session in, and it was actually abbreviated because he had some technical issues, in 42 laps, he came from absolutely zero experience in a DW12 to running a lap time just almost 3 seconds off of Willpower. That's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that rounded out the test. Everybody went home, and I just got an email from Monica Hilton from Barracuda Racing a few minutes ago. So hello, Monica.
So other than the actual speed on track, any other juicy tidbits from the 3 days there at Barber? Any new liveries that especially strike you, or anything else happening kind of off track?
The livery that everyone was talking about was Tony Kanaan's new look, which kind of looks like an armadillo, to be honest.
Okay.
But it fits.
You got to explain that. I mean,
it's like this silver and grayish ribbed looking thing, and it matches the livery and look of his new sponsor, which I don't know if I should. I don't know if I can say it or not.
Well, we'll see it in.
You know what?
We'll see it at St. Pete, but that's what.
You know what? Pictures of him in his fire suit are already out, so I can go ahead and say it. It's hydroxy cut.
Okay.
So the car kind of matches the hydroxy cut look with like all this arch steel and getting ripped and stuff like that. I guess is what you want to say.
Okay. So he's got the airbrush abs on it.
Yeah, sort of like that. It's pretty cool though. Once you look at some pictures, I'm a big fan of Tristan Vaudier's livery. It's a orange, white, and blue look. Very classic, clean looking design. I like clean design is my thing.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like Pagano's a little bit, except the colors are different. Obviously, my favorite though is definitely Alex Taglioni's. They have gone with a mixture of dark blue and like a baby, kind of like a Carolina blue, I guess, as more the color. And it's separated by a strap of orange, and it looks awesome.
Oh, absolutely, the orange there with the blue really would look nice. And here I'm looking at one of Mr. McKay's photos of it now, and yeah, the complimentary red and orange and blue there. Yeah, that looks good. That looks really good. I'm trying to find a picture of Kanon's car. Is it kind of bluish on the nose with the black and gray ribbing looking thing?
Yep.
Okay, I got it.
Like I said, it looks like an armadillo.
Yeah. So, that's interesting. With the Broscom associate sponsor there on the side pod or on the side sill of the cockpit.
Yep, and it's got Bryant up in front of the cockpit as well. Now, one thing I did notice I'd like to point out that I found kind of interesting was the fact that if you look on Simon Pagenaud and Tristan Vaudier's cars, just like in the near the wheel area on both of them, there's a little sticker that says Kingdom Racing on it.
On whose?
On both Vaudier and Pagenaud.
Okay.
Are you familiar with Kingdom Racing?
Yes. They were...
That was Davey Hamilton's
team. Yeah, they were partners with Davey.
Yeah.
And in fact, are they still?
Yeah, they still are. Okay. Davey is... All right, here's the rule. If you're talking about Simon Pagenaud's car, that is Schmidt Hamilton Racing.
Right.
If you're talking about Tristan Vaudier's car, that is Schmidt Peterson Racing.
Okay.
It has to do with the allocation of the HP money is what it is.
Right.
Another thing about the Schmidt cars that I noticed was on the very tip of the nose on both of them, they have a sticker on there that says CG, and it's in honor of Chris Griffiths.
Yes, who we lost last year, right?
Yep, and it's on both of the very end of the nose of both Schmidt cars. So I just thought that was kind of neat.
Nice touch. Well,
also, in the airbox area of Joseph Newgarden's car, there's a smiley face.
You know, that is such a cool team, and Newgarden is such a what's the right adjective used to describe him?
Goofball.
Okay, yes, maybe that's it. But an outgoing, engaging goofball, I guess. If you've seen any of the off-season videos or the videos that he and Hinch put on or put together in the middle of last year, even. It doesn't surprise me at all that something like that is on his car.
Let me tell you too. That is Newgarden. That is him all the time. He's not putting on. That's no. What he really
likes. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, funny you should bring up the off-season videos. I talked to Will Power about that, too, because when I was talking to him, I told him I really enjoyed those videos. And he told me, he said, you know, the funny thing was is those were all done in one afternoon. He's like, it was awesome. We said we just kept doing them, and they just kept rolling out. And it's like,
nice.
He said most of it was off the cuff, too.
Yeah.
He agreed with me that my favorite was the one where they had they were in the window. In front of the conference room.
Oh yes, with the remote.
With the remote, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. So, any other news from the Barber Open test?
You know, it's funny because another one of the big stories was the Harlem Shake video that Tony Kanon had at his wedding.
Oh yes, at his wedding. I thought you were because Newgarden did one there at on the Yard Bricks.
No,
I haven't seen the one. I've heard about it, but I haven't seen the one from the from Kanon's wedding.
Yeah, Rubens Barrichello actually starts it out with his helmet on.
Nice.
And because for those of you that don't know, Tony Kanon got married to Lauren Bolander this past weekend, better known to people in the paddock as Lobo. And at their wedding, there was a lot of drivers there, so they recorded a Harlem Shake video, which is what you do with large groups of people now.
And also, I can't wait for that fad to be over.
Also, another funny thing from the actual media day was the Battle of the Hair. AJ Allmendinger came in there talking about how now Elio has the second best hair on Team Penske. And Elio came back in there and fired back. He's like, he may have the best hair, but I have 3 500 wins.
Yeah, slam, take that.
And then Sebastian Saavedra come in there, and I asked him, I said, you know, we've had Allmendinger and Castro Neves in here arguing about how who had better hair. And I asked him, I said, do you think you have the best hair in the paddock? And he said, absolutely.
Yeah, I got to go with Saavedra there. I have to go with Saavedra.
So, yeah, the big story, I mean, the big story, if you talk to the drivers, was number one, the grip. Nobody was prepared for that grip. In fact, Hinchcliffe told me that their setup was 100% wrong for the conditions that they encountered. And that basically they had to start back at ground zero and work their way back. And number two was that literally that Wednesday morning, everybody talking about their neck hurting from the lateral G's that was being pushed on them going around the track.
And people say drivers aren't athletes.
Yeah. Yeah. Elio was like, I guess, and Hinch actually said the same thing. They both said that, I guess we're going to have to go back to the gym and spend a little more time in there. But that was pretty much the wrap up from testing.
All right. Well, there you go. And thank you very much, Kevin. Appreciate you and Brian going down there to cover it for us. And Brian, he's an Iron Man. He left Barber and drove straight to Sebring. He's at Sebring right now. Got there this morning. And shot USF 2000, and I think he's doing some edits and catching some shut-eye and then going to catch the I don't know about shut-eye, maybe some downtime might be the better way to put it, to catch the night practice for the American Le Mans Series. And he'll be at Sebring all weekend long. He'll get a week off and then back at it at St. Petersburg.
And then he gets a week off and then he's back at it at Barber again.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, yeah, it's I wish we had budget to send him on to Long Beach after that. Sean, we need some non-zero digits, please.
Yeah, we're gonna have to increase the budget, sir.
But anyway, so yeah, mad props to Brian. I mean, putting in some serious hours and giving us some fantastic photos. In fact, go to openpaddock.net, click on photo galleries, IndyCar. Right there at the top of the list is the photos that Brian took at the Barber Motorsports Park during this open test. So again, appreciate both of you doing the work that you do. It's great stuff.
Thanks a lot. We really enjoyed it.